Good morning. Welcome to Local Matters. I'm Tiffany Anton from the Biz Foundry. I have Louis Matheny in this morning from Harper's Rare Books and Collectibles.
That's
Hi,
right.
Louis.
Hi. How are you?
That's kind of a mouthful, a little bit. It feels like there's a lot going on there.
Well, it's easy to whittle it down to the origin of the name, which is Harper's, which happens to be the name of my cousin's dog, and that's how I came up with the name for this store.
You really just love this dog a lot, or what?
Yeah, I love this dog a lot, and I've done several projects over the years where you go name searching, and you can really drive yourself crazy and also sort of get lost in the process and come up with something terrible. But you just have to sort of take a breath and step back. And I was with my cousin, who has this dog, Harper, and we were going through family names and all sorts of things. And suddenly I just was looking into her eyes, and it's as if she hypnotized me and said, "You will name the store after my dog, Harper." She didn't, but that was it. Yeah. I don't know why. It just came to me.
Well, and I think, like you said, with owning a business, you get so caught up in what does, you know, the name has to be perfect.
Yes.
But it's like Nike at some point did not mean sports apparel. Nike at some point was just, what's N-I-K-E? What does that mean? What is it? How do you even say it? Like, you know, and I'm sure they're sitting around and it didn't mean anything. It was just, you create what you create.
Absolutely. Yeah, I hate to use the word organic because it's so overused, but it definitely was an organic process, just sitting with somebody that I love and trust and sort of getting our brains together. And one of the amazing things about that, I think, in the end, was I had always planned on hosting pet adoptions at the store, which is what we'll be doing. I've talked to two of our local shelters, and we'll have dogs and cats in there almost every day that we're open to the public. So the idea that we're hosting pet adoptions at a store that happens to have a dog's name is just kind of perfect.
So what is Harper's Rare Books and Collectibles?
Well, Harper's Rare Books and Collectibles is the result of my having bought into one of the greatest rare bookstores in the country many years ago in the Northeast. There was a rare and collectible bookstore north of Philadelphia, near where I used to have a country home, and I'd been going there for some years, and the mystique of the place was mentioned in a New York Times article about the man that owned it at the time, and it more or less was, come to this great rare and collectible bookstore, but don't be prepared to buy because he doesn't like to sell. And he didn't. He didn't have things priced. You'd go in, hang out, bring him a stack of books, hand them to him, and he would say, take down your phone number, I'll call you in a couple weeks and tell you how they're priced. A month later, you'd have to go back and say, hey, how about those books? And he would sell you maybe one of the entire stack. So the amazing thing is that lent itself to the fact that we have this amazing inventory. And I keep saying amazing because I keep getting amazed every time we open a box. It's around 15,000 books. Many are rare. Many more are just great, you know, easy-priced books to sell. We're not going to be, you know, trying to force high-priced books onto people, certainly in this area. We'll be selling a lot of high-end things online, where I've been doing business for years as a book buyer and seller. But around 300 cartons of books had not been opened in 40 years, and we're just opening them now. Every time we open a box, we find something crazy, you know. It's just sort of like at a glance. One of the great first finds was a book that I noticed was embossed in gold on the spine. Very tiny little red book, and the numbers 1678 on the spine. And I thought, I wonder what 1678 means. And I opened it up to the copyright page. 1678 was the copyright.
Wow.
And that was a big wow. And that book has only come into existence for sale to the public twice in the last, say, 10 years, both times at Sotheby's in London, and it went for $3,000 a book. I'm talking a book that's the size of a paperback. Its content matter, the writer, are not important or exciting. It is actually a great example of what the printing press was doing 200 years into its existence. That's how early in the printing press this was. So that's the kind of stuff we're finding.
So the inventory, where are you getting this inventory from?
The store that I bought into. So
wow.
I bought the entire business along with all of the books, and unfortunately the owner was well up in his years, and I really was pushing him to go into business with me so that we could actually reopen. He'd been closed for several years because of his health, and the bookstore was located on the fourth floor attic above an antique store that was difficult to find and get into. And so I was going to relocate the bookstore originally to a place that he'd be able to walk into. I wanted him to enjoy in his last months, really, or years of his life, selling books again. But that didn't come to fruition. We got the store moved, and then unfortunately he passed, and I was left with the entire collection. And it's been several years of thinking about when and where I might do this, and just suddenly reading went from being a trend to sort of a mainstay thing in culture like we had for many, many years in society. You know, once upon a time, every conversation you were told to start with, read any good books lately? So also where to do it, And having grown up in Cookeville, I've always been very dedicated to helping support business here. And I worked on promoting history. I'm a history nut about Putnam and Cookeville both. So the time was just right. Literally, when COVID settled in and I had just bought a home here with no plans to live here full time, I had to make a decision of my three homes. And we've always had three homes. Where would I rather be right then? And all of a sudden, it's stay in Cookeville and open this bookstore finally.
In case you're just joining us, we have Lewis Matheny in with Harper's Rare Books and Collectibles that is not open yet, we should mention. It's you're kind of in the last-minute phases. You actually just buzzed over here just to do this interview and kind of talk about it in the middle of all the other things that you're doing there of opening more boxes and seeing, you know, all the inventory that you're putting in there.
Yeah.
So take me, let's go back a little bit of a way. Maybe I won't say it that long. So as a kid, you mentioned growing up here.
Yes.
Were you born in this area too?
I was actually born in Dayton, Ohio. My family have all been here for many, many years. And if we go back several hundred years, I have ancestors in my family that actually helped form Putnam County. They were poor Overton farmers in the southwest corner of Overton, feeling overtaxed, actually. And they were just poor farmers. And they worked together with several people to petition the Tennessee State Legislature and start Putnam County. Fast forward a few more years, and my grandfather was originally the sole mail carrier for the entire town of Cookeville, when Cookeville was once that small. So we've all been a part of, you know, we have this great love of this town, all of us, for many generations. If you'd known my aunt, who was my mom, my surrogate mom growing up, she volunteered at the Putnam County Library, the Cookeville History Museum, the Depot Museum, ran a breast cancer awareness group. It's all about civic duty and civic pride, and that's something I was taught. So I was oddly also an early reader. I was able to read by the age of 3. And that was a very strange thing, and people really didn't know what to do with a kid in the 1960s in Cookeville who could read at 3. So by the time I got to kindergarten, and because I've always had explosive energy and still do at age 60, couldn't take a nap at nap time, so the teacher would let me read to the kids at nap time. And I'm told I did it in first grade as well. I don't remember that exactly. But by age 10, I began volunteering at the old library, which was called the Clara Cox Epperson Library. And along the way, I've just had so many great mother figures and matrons and women in my life who have guided and supported me. My sister and I were actually abandoned by our biological mother at birth, and we couldn't have had a better blessing because it led to me being brought to Cookeville, where I was raised by my aunt and my grandmother, and again, all the teachers, the librarians, so many people that took me under their wing. So it's inevitable one day I would have a bookstore, you know.
But see, so you grew up here.
Yes.
But you must have been, so I always say with people, the people who grew up here, they're either like, I got to get out of here and I got to spread my wings, or I love it here and I'm going to stay here forever. And so you had a little bit of that, I got to get out of here.
So I've always been both, and that's the I like kind of joking about myself. There are a handful of questions I always get asked, and we're in a very divided society and world now. So I get asked very often, are you a country boy or a city boy? And my answer is always yes, I'm a country boy or a city boy. I moved to New York City at age 23, absolutely love New York City, but I love my life here as well. I'm in the process of rebuilding a log cabin that came down through my family out in the woods north of Cookeville, and I love the best of both worlds. Are you a conservative or liberal? And my answer is always yes. Depends on the topic, you know. So I can't be pigeonholed. So, yes, I actually, at age 15...
Don't pin me down to any label.
Well, I mean, you know, I wasn't aware of it for so long until much later in life that people were always kind of curious about how do we define you? You know, you're sort of this enigma, I guess. For starters, yeah, at age 15, I ran away from home. I left Cookeville, and I said, I'll never set foot in that town ever again. And then I spent the entire rest of my life coming back, working on preserving history and supporting local business and, you know.
And
so.
And really investing into this area.
Yes, very much so. Yeah.
And so at 15, and you were like, I'm never going back. What was your plan at 15? I mean, you're 15, so.
Well, my plan at 15 was the result of, you know, I was definitely a version of a troubled teenager on some level, though a lot of people had no idea. My plan was actually to go find my biological mother, and that was my quest, to go find her, and I did. And then from there, for me, it was just a great big adventure. I was living in the big, booming metropolis of Dayton, Ohio, me thinking that was a big city at the time. And then within months, we'd moved out to Colorado, so I lived in Colorado for a while, and bounced around a bit, went to college for a year in Kentucky, realized I loved everything about college except for studying and going to classes, so I wasn't really suited for college, down to Atlanta to live with a girlfriend for a while, back to Cookeville, and then to New York at 23, so... But, you know, it's my roots are here. My roots are in New York City. It's kind of hard to explain, but I'll be in New York to a point that I say, I got to have a break from this. I love the electricity, the pace, the energy there that's just exhausting to other people. I have too much energy at whatever age I am.
In case people listening can't tell, there is an energy in this room right now of just you kind of going.
Boom, boom, boom.
Yeah. So at 10 years old, what would people have said? What would Lewis have said? Were you going to be an entrepreneur?
Not necessarily an entrepreneur. I had this interesting idea that vaudeville still existed in New York City. I was an actor at a young age, and I was very fortunate to get into professional theater at a younger age than a lot of kids. And there was a wonderful theater director at Tennessee Tech by the name of Jerry Henderson, who put me in a play that he was doing. I think I was 13 when I first did it, and then went on for a couple of years. We actually toured into Crossville and Jackson, and then I got to go spend the summer in
the big towns of Crossville.
Yeah, and Jackson, County. You know, yeah, no, Jackson, Tennessee, actually. Okay. And what was fascinating about Jackson, Tennessee, was it was one of those big, large performing arts center. It was my first time on stage to be mic'd, so everything was amplified, and that was one of the earliest feelings that I had about being nervous on stage. That was very unusual to be booming, you know, that loud. I had a loud voice. I had a deep voice at a young age as well. But so again, just so many great people that guided me and I guess took me under their wing, and I went off to New York to be an actor and had work in commercials and worked on stage there for years. But ultimately, my dream in New York was to be a children's book writer and illustrator, which I eventually became.
We're going to get into that in a second.
Okay.
What's so important about shopping with locally owned businesses?
When you shop local, your hard-earned dollars stay here in the community, helping to benefit your friends and neighbors, local schools, roads, and all aspects of community life.
But what happens to my money if I spend it online or at a national chain store?
In most cases, the profits go far away, out of state, corporate headquarters, or even overseas.
It doesn't take any extra effort to shop local. Office Mart on South Jefferson and Cookeville is your locally owned office furniture and supply store. For over 35 years, they've been proud to serve businesses in the Upper Cumberland with quality and value. You get real customer service, too. And unlike shopping online, you can actually see and try out the large inventory of office furniture in their showroom. And when it's delivered, it's not a box on your step. They're glad to install and set up everything. Office Mart. There's no other locally owned office store in the region. South Jefferson Avenue across from Hardee's. Shop local at Office Mart.
Thanks for sticking with us. I'm Tiffany Anton from the Biz Foundry. I have Lewis Matheny from Harper's Rare Books and Collectibles and kind of just a million other things. that's a little bit of why you're in here today. But so you were just mentioning you're in New York City. You're kind of getting into acting, but you really wanted to do children's books. So tell me about that.
Well, I just kept beating the pavement like you're told to do. I beat the pavement a lot as an actor and got work. I did exactly what they said to do, which is, you know, get out there, go to auditions, as many as possible.
And you had no formal training.
No,
other than
great training with Jerry Henderson, that director I mentioned earlier. But I took up formal training when I got there. I was always a fan of Shakespeare, and I got to study with one of the greatest Shakespeare companies in the world, which was the American Globe Theater. And then I studied with a great commercial director. I had a lot of great people again along the way, and I took it very seriously, and I treated it like a business. And that's one of the things is you've got a dream. You know, as an artist, you have to remember that you do have the ability to make money, and if you want to make money, treat it like a business.
How do you think you knew to do that, to treat it as a business?
I sought a lot of advice. I did. I just reached out to so many people, and I was treated incredibly well when I first got there, and I was so naive, and I had a job at this restaurant, and there were a lot of things I did that were kind of silly to a New Yorker, and I was immediately nicknamed Beaver, as in Beaver Cleaver from Leave It to Beaver. Mm-hmm. I mean, I really was this little kid from Tennessee, and I'm going to write kids' books and be an actor, and they were always like, oh, Beaver, you know. So a lot of great people, and I listened to the advice, and I did a lot of things kind of sensibly, and I've always been this sort of like group person where I want to throw things together. And you know, in elementary school, for example, I almost always had to have my extra project for the year. In third grade, I wanted to put on a puppet show of The Wizard of Oz. So I not only got a refrigerator box, painted it with bricks and curtains on the outside, got a cassette recorder back then, which was high tech, to record all the sound effects, wrote the script, made the puppets, but put everybody in the class in the show, you know. So I get to New York City, and one of the things I thought about was, you know, in looking at this as a business, we all need some sort of support, those of us that don't really know what the heck we're doing, and there must be a lot of others like me. So I started a group called ASAP, A-S-A-P, and it stood for Artists Supporting Artists Priorities. Whether you're in the performing arts or a painter, we got together and we did the things that, you know, you're taught to do anyhow. Look at your daily task, what is your goal for the week, what is your plan for the month, what is your short-term plan, what is your long, you know, your year plan, and it was very effective.
And this is like early to mid-80s-ish time?
Yeah, well, I actually started that in the early 90s. I fell into the fitness industry by accident, you might say, at 23 or 24. Again, my life has been just a series of, if you want to look at it as divine intervention, absolutely, fate. My Jewish friends in New York have a great Yiddish term, which is bashert. Bashert is the person you're intended to meet. It usually means a husband and or a wife. But in this case, anybody you're fated to meet. So my life was just a constant stream of people I was fated to meet, I feel like. So I was in the fitness industry for 15 years. I was a personal trainer. I eventually became a trainer of other trainers. I provided continuing education. I specialized in sports med. And when I hit about 30 years old, I thought, well, I didn't really write that kid's book. I'm probably not gonna. But as I started inching toward 40, I said to myself, Lewis, you called Charles Schulz on the phone, the creator of Peanuts, when you were 7. You somehow got his phone number and called him and said, I want to be a cartoonist when I grow up.
What? Why? Wait, wait, wait.
Yeah, okay.
You're trying to kind of breeze past this real quickly.
There's a lot to breeze past, let me tell you.
So you...
Yes.
What?
Well, my only understanding of how I got the number, I read a book later that was written by a co-producer of his, I think, on the animated series, in which... it's either he or I think the guy's name was Lee Mendelson put their phone number in one of the comic strips and inadvertently, you know, you got to understand this is back in the 1960s and we didn't think about privacy at all like we do now, but everybody wound up picking up the phone and calling. I was one of many people and I've had this little original Snoopy cartoon that Schulz drew for me. And it's interesting, before I got into theater, I was a Southern kid with a Southern accent at age 7. And I have a sweet little note saying something like, you Southerners have such a charming way of speaking.
Wow.
So, yeah. So, you know, at 40, I said, you know, it's time to do it. And I just took a dive out of the...
Pretty much your 20s and your 30s were really kind of spent in New York.
I moved to New York at 23, and I've been there for 35 or 36 years now, and only left in 2019 briefly, and I'm back again. Just I'm living in more or less Times Square now again. But love New York City, and I also live in Chicago. So right now it's New York City, Chicago, and Cookeville. For a while it was New York City, Chicago, and a country home west of New York City.
They all just, you know, they fit so much together. When I think of New York City, I think of Cookeville right there along with it. In case you're just joining us, we have Lewis Matheny with Harper's Rare Books and Collectibles in today. So you're in New York City. You decide, okay, it's time to write a book.
Yeah.
And then what? How's that go?
Well,
how do you even know how to... do it, and where do you get the resources?
Oh, well, I again just ask and
you
ask
the
and
right
ask
people.
And
yeah.
Talk about fated people. When I first moved to New York City, I was invited by a college mate of mine who was going to Tennessee Tech at the time from New York, and I was a big party thrower in Cookeville. I DJed at a nightclub here, and I was always throwing these lavish parties at the house where I grew up, where my dad now lives. And some guy just walked up to me at either a party or the nightclub, which at the time was called Rudolph's, which is where Dipsy Doodle is now, down on Highway 70.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember which, but walked up to me, and the guy just said out of the blue, I got to tell you something. You are a New Yorker. You've got something. You don't belong in Cookeville. You got to go to New York. And I was ready to go on to something else. I just wasn't sure what at the time. I've always just waited to see when a door opens and generally jumped through it. And, you know, went off to New York City literally with $50 to my name. It's always been a leap of faith.
So do you just have one children's book on record? Or
no, four.
Four books,
yeah.
Okay.
I had three in a series starting in around 2006. I actually started a publishing company. I had gone through years of what is known as the rejection process, which led to a major exhibit that I put together in New York City in 2006 called Cartoon Limbo. and I invited some of the most famous cartoonists and comic artists and illustrators of all time. And at the time, when Maurice Sendak was still alive, he and I were good friends, and I got him to donate a painting. If you can imagine, Maurice Sendak had a painting that had been rejected, and this is the contents of the show. These were all people who had their work rejected. And what I learned along the way is that the most famous, the most successful cartoonists of all time have stacks that are triple the amount and height of their published stuff, you know. Mm-hmm. And the first person to join the show, Schultz was dead by then, but his wife, his widow, Jean, and I told her my story about called your husband when I was seven. They were the first to join the show with letters that he'd written in 1947 to a wartime buddy just saying, I'm really hanging in there, but this is really getting frustrated, and I don't think I'll ever be a published cartoonist, if you can imagine.
Wow.
And a few years later, he was published. So once Schultz joined the show, Mort Walker, who did Beetle Bailey, joined, and it was just an amazing show.
Yeah, so you actually got four books published.
Mm-hmm.
Can people find these books? How do they?
The first three have been out of print for some years, but we're going back into publication in the next year. My fourth, which came out a couple of years ago, is still in print, and right now can be found at Harper's Rare Books and Collectibles once we open to the public.
Soon it will be found here in Cookeville.
Yeah. Yes.
And so, I mean, do people know, like, what do you think that people in Cookeville know you for?
I can't begin to imagine. I've heard several rumors. There's lots of gossip. I know that I've sort of created that persona, so I don't know. I think that, like, some people find me off-putting, and those that do, there's nothing I can do about that. I remarkably have never really cared much at all what anybody thinks about me. I think a lot of people would say what I've always said about myself. I believe in love and truth more than anything in life. I love myself, and I'm truthful to myself, and when I stay true to myself, my life works out well. And if I wander into an untruthful area at some point, and I'm not loving to myself and others, then you know, life can just go off the rails. So I think people probably still say he seems really idealistic and he's just going to always be Peter Pan who's never going to grow up. I've heard that a lot. So, yeah.
Stick with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Tiffany Anton from the Biz Foundry. I have Louis Matheny from Harper's Rare Books and Collectibles in today. So let's get back. I mean, I feel like we could talk about your life and, you know, do you feel like you've lived a million years in 60?
I do, and I've been told that by so many people.
Yeah, I feel like we could talk, you know, each year of your life is a different story. But so tell me more about what's going on with Harper's Rare Books and Collectibles. Why that location? You're located downtown on the west side. Mm-hmm. Why that location?
Well, I love that part of town. A classmate of mine since kindergarten, Melinda Kiefer, it really got all that going years ago.
She's freaking amazing.
She is, you know. And my aunt at the time was a volunteer. My aunt volunteered for the Cookeville History Museum and the Depot Museum, the library, for 20 years. And she was oddly known for being a power walker, especially for a woman of her age. She was known for parking at the Depot, kind of storming down Broad to the Courthouse Square and then back up Spring, you know, and was always urging people to get involved in that part of town and helping preserve history. So she began writing me in New York City years ago, saying, your classmate, Melinda Stone Kiefer, is doing these amazing things, and when you get back to Cookeville, you have to check it all out. And that eventually led to me, my love of history grew gradually over the years after being in New York City. And I began collecting vintage postcards, early 20th century postcards of Cookeville off of eBay. I think I beat everybody out on getting them because I snatched up around 300 in total, some very rare, some that are rather ordinary. And I wound up donating all of those to the Cookeville History Museum in honor of my aunt, who was a volunteer there. And then my publishing company published a book called Weather is Great, Wish You Were Here, of all those postcards, and then some other printed memorabilia. And in it, I included a lot of my aunt's postcards to me that started when I ran away from home, when she found where I was living. She always followed me wherever I went, you know, in life with postcards. And those are in the book. And it's a sweet story and a great tribute to the woman who raised me.
So do you have a copy that will go into Harper's?
We're going back into publication with it, a second edition. We did a limited run of 300 only, and it was published just in her honor. So we published just enough for the guests that came to. We had the surprise party for her, and 300 people came to this party to honor my aunt, you know, and she hated the spotlight on her at all, you know. But
she is not like you.
No, it's, you know, and here I was an actor, you know, always in the spotlight, and my aunt would just always say to me year after year after year, don't let it go to your head. Don't let it give you the big head, you know. At some point, we were talking about my history in writing kids' books. One of the first books I was trying to get off the ground was a Katie Lang song called Big Bone Gal. And Katie and her co-writer Ben Meek and I had an agreement to do this book together, and we were looking to be picked up by a publisher, and Hyperion, which was a junior division of Disney for a while, had picked it up. Now, none of us were in contract yet, but a newspaper in New York City called The Daily News was making a list of its top 100 cool New Yorkers, and they had a lot of famous people on the list, and they picked a handful of people that were up and coming, you might say, at the time, and they put me on the list. So Madonna was 70-something, I was 80-something, and Lou Reed was 90-something, so I kind of felt like I was in good company there, and that's when things really took off for me as a writer and an illustrator. Besides kids' books, you know, I was looking to just sell my, I call them pen and ink drawings, you could call them cartoons if you wanted to, had a lot of success with that. I'd been working as a photographer for some years and had no interest in pursuing that as a career, but the press picked up on that, and that was kind of like a runaway career with me, so I'm still an avid, you know, hobbyist photographer. Before COVID really settled in, I have a friend that works in federal law enforcement that got me informed about it a little bit early on, and by January of 20 had called me to say, now, if you had to choose one of your homes and go live in one of your homes and stay there and possibly work from there, where would it be? And I said, I want to know why you're asking this. You know, they had enough information that they knew that this might be coming to the U.S. and turned into what it did turn into. And we just chose Cookeville. It just was the right time, you know.
So was that location on West Broad open at that time? It was, right?
Where we are now, the location of the bookstore was P. Dilly's, mm-hmm. Cupcakes. And she was actually looking to move to a smaller location just after COVID hit. And she's done incredibly well in this great little, almost little house that she's in. So we moved into that space. I originally was opening a museum based on the Putnam Drive-In movie theater, which my father ran in the 1960s.
That's the thing. I mean, you've had some kind of teasers in the window, and there's been so many rumors about what's going into that location.
Yes. Well, and you know, we were intended to open. Look, we were planning to open the museum by March. We were very shy of our budget just to get open right when COVID hit, and I immediately studied what was going to happen to nonprofits, big and small, and the small ones and the ones that weren't fully funded yet were probably going to go under. So we took a bow out very quickly. We just decided immediately, and I'm an avid supporter of a lot of the nonprofits here, the Cookeville History Museum, WCTE, Cityscape, and I just said to myself, you know, I can't be going after the same money, you might say. You know, there's just a certain demographic that contributes to nonprofits. I can't do that. I've got to support these folks. So that's what I said to everybody. We're shutting the museum down. We want you to now support Cityscape and the Cookeville History Museum and WCTE. And then from there, the idea of growing the bookstore, that idea just grew on its own, you know.
Thanks for sticking with us. We have Louis Matheny in with Harper's Rare Books and Collectibles today. So aside from the bookstore downstairs and collect, what's the collectible part of things? Just the books, or what else do you have going on there?
We have a major vinyl collection. We have an awesome rare vinyl collection of all types. And we were very lucky to be gifted with the personal jazz collection from a guy that was in showbiz for years, a guy by the name of Ken Greengrass, whose wife I'm still great friends with. And Ken and his wife, Jerry, were showbiz managers. They managed Steve Lawrence, Edie Gourmet, and Art Garfunkel, and he was a jazz fan. And after he passed, his wife wanted me to have the jazz collection. I actually have not opened those boxes yet either, and I hear it's an amazing collection. It's just sitting in the store waiting. We've been very short-staffed. Starting before COVID, there was a great difficulty in finding willing and able workers. There's just something that's happened to the work ethic and the work in this country in general. And there was a long period there where we just really thought we weren't going to be able to get open. After we decided to shut down the museum, we said we're going to open the bookstore by August. And then combined with the raising COVID numbers and the lack of staff, we just realized that's not going to be possible. And we said, well, certainly by Christmas, the COVID numbers will drop to zero. And they did not. Yeah. So somewhere in there, suddenly, just people started coming out of the woodwork who wanted to work. And we have this amazing crew that I'm kind of running to keep up with on all these projects. So we had pushed originally to be open within a couple of weeks, I'd say by the end of June. And now we think it's going to be somewhere more like a little after July 4th. So the collectibles include vinyl, vintage clothing, and we were planning on having a space, a wall in the bookstore to exhibit local artists and items of historical significance, and we actually took on another space upstairs, a big room, which will be Harper's Gallery. As I said, a door opens, I go through the door. Next became the idea that we wanted to have a
live... Does it open, or do you just bust through the door?
They open. Well, or both.
A little bit of both, maybe.
It's kind of like I hear the creak. Again, there's this thing that happens, divine intervention, fate, whatever you want to call it, you know. I hear the creak of the door, and I just look and go, what about that? So we were planning a small space that we were going to have dedicated as a live virtual performance space. As a result of COVID, a lot of musicians, a lot of people in general that are on the mic are still going to continue just being in a space where they're broadcasting, you know, over, say, a YouTube channel. But from there, we brought in an expert on sound and video, a guy out of Nashville, wonderful guy named Johnny Garcia, who plays guitar for Trisha Yearwood and Garth Brooks, and he took the time out to come in and consult with us. And we just started sort of edging the budget up little by little, and suddenly he said, well, you know, you're really getting close to having a really good recording studio. Would you want to go a little further and have a recording studio? So there's the creak of that door. No, we had no plans to open a recording studio. Now we're opening a recording studio, Cookville's first recording studio that I can think of, at least in some years, and it will equal, if not surpass, Nashville recording studios in terms of quality. And it's just something I think Cookville needs and would like to have. The talent here is just phenomenal.
There's a lot of creatives, and I love to see the buzz of what's going on the west side. And just, I love our boutiques in town, and I like the fact that we have a new, different something going in downtown. Yep. And that's really exciting, and it's really exciting to see what you do and how that you pivot with times changing. I think you're very up on what's going on and what's going to work.
Yeah, I read a lot. I mean, I inform myself. You know, when I realized reading was going from kind of a trend into a mainstream way of life by way of teens and preteens, if you haven't heard, and that's what I've been reading a lot of. It's people my age and older, and it's teens and preteens that are suddenly going, I want to read, you know.
So your thought is that this is going to be somewhat of a mix of a museum and a store where people can come and hang out and look and not necessarily purchase a bunch of stuff, but see some really cool stuff as well? Is that kind of...
Well, yeah, I mean, in a way, the gallery, which will be Harper's Gallery, will be upstairs from the store, so separate from it, but just up a flight of stairs. What it's really going to be a combination of is a retail space, you know, Harper's Rare Books and Collectibles, and a community center. As mm-hmm. I said, we are hosting pet adoptions in the store. We're donating many libraries to... We reached out to about 30 senior-assisted living facilities in the area, and we're donating many libraries to those. And what that evolved into is my reminding myself that I also once drove what was known as a bookmobile here in Cookville before I moved to New York City. So instead of just leaving a library, we're going to go rotate books in and out. At first, we were not accepting any book donations from people. We have a lot of people coming to us trying to sell or donate books. But we said, yeah, we'll donate. We'll take your donations. You'll be a part of something much bigger.
You're located in the old P. Dilley's building, which is on West Broad.
Yeah, for most people that are locals, it's actually in the great old Jenkins and Darwin Brothers building. It was once a great store there, and I'm putting together a complete history of Broad from Walnut to Cedar using... I have a collection of all the phone books from Cookville from the 50s and 60s, and I'm going through getting what store was that location in what year. So that was mostly Jenkins and Darwin. P. Dilley's was there for a while. We have several other wonderful... stores and businesses within the building.
How else can people find you besides just your physical location? Do you have a social media presence?
Absolutely. I would say the way to start right now is find us at Harper's Rare Books and Collectibles on Facebook, and then from there you'll be led to the gallery, the recording studios, make plans to open probably in August.
But do you have a website yet? Up and running?
We do, but really
the Facebook page.
The Facebook page is the way to go. Yeah, we haven't developed the website enough yet. So
okay. Yeah. Well, check out Harper's Rare Books and Collectibles. Thank you, Lewis, for coming in today. It was great to have you. I mean, I feel like we could talk for another hour or so, but that's all the time we have.
We can do that off mic sometime.
That's right. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.